With lower oil production and prices, Alaska has a budget deficit, and has for years. Is tapping into the permanent fund the solution? Politicians on both sides of the aisle are starting to say yes, but what would that look like? How would it affect the state's $66 billion investment account? Today on Talk of Alaska, we'll discuss the permanent fund, how it works, and what it would mean to use it to fund state government.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
This is Talk of Alaska. I'm Ann Hillman. Today, we're talking about the permanent fund. How does it work, and what would it look like if we started using the earnings reserve to fund a portion of state government? My guests today are all at the KTOO studios in Juneau. For the first half of the program, I'd like to welcome Angela Riddell, the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. We're going to start with a permanent fund primer. How does it work? What might the effects be? And for the second half of the program, we'll be joined by two other guests to discuss the pros and cons. So, Ms. Riddell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. And listeners, what questions do you have about the permanent fund? What do you think it should be used for? Let us know by calling 1-800-478-8255 or 550-8422 in Anchorage. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Ms. Riddell, oftentimes people just think of the permanent fund as this giant investment account that's kind of set aside for dividends and that's it. Can you give just sort of a brief explanation of how the fund is set up?
Sure. So it's important to remember that the fund itself was created by the Constitution back 41 years ago. In 1976, the voters approved the creation of the fund. And the idea was that at least 25% of our royalty, that non-renewable resource, would be set aside. And that is what we talk about as the principal or the corpus of the fund. And what the Constitution contemplated was that that money would be put in income-producing investments, and the income from those investments would be directed to the general fund or another fund as set up by law. And the fund that was set up by law was the earnings reserve account. And the corporation was directed to invest the earnings reserve account similar to the corpus of the fund. So when we talk about the $66, $65 billion of the permanent fund, what we're really talking about is both the corpus and the earnings reserve account. So both of those together are that total.
So with those two separate chunks of money, are there different rules applying to each different piece?
So the rules that apply to each of the pieces are not about the investment, but rather what gets deposited in each of those accounts and then how those accounts can be spent. So the only thing that goes into the principal of the account is those mineral royalty deposits. It's also inflation proofing to make sure that that first deposit of $734,000 has the same spending capability today as it did 41 years ago. And also any additional deposits that the legislature has made over the years. At times when the state was flush, they have chosen to appropriate up to, and it has been, totaled $7 billion in additional appropriations to the fund outside of that mineral royalty and inflation proofing.
Oh.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And so the earnings reserve account, though, is where all that income goes. It's invested in the same investments as the corpus of the fund, and that is the money that is available for appropriation and has a balance at the end of January of $16.5 billion.
So if they're both invested in the same way and in the same things, how, but part of it is it could be appropriated to different accounts. How does that change your investments? Like, how do you make sure that whatever could be appropriated to pay for government spending? How do you make that liquid or make it accessible and decide what to sell, I guess?
That's a really good question. So the way it works now is that each investment is bought on a pro rata share. So that means, like, if you have $10 in the principal and you have $2 in the earnings reserve account, one-fifth or 20% of each investment is going to be owned by the earnings reserve account, and 80% of it is going to be owned by the principal of the fund. As we go through the debate and the discussion about how to use the earnings reserve account, once the legislature and the governor agree on a methodology, the Board of Trustees will make a determination as to whether it's in the fiduciary interest to continue that methodology or if the earnings reserve account or a portion of the earnings reserve account should be invested separately in probably lower risk, more liquid investments to ensure that that money is there and available for the use as intended by the appropriation mechanism.
So it's up to the board to make that decision, and they make most of the investment decisions.
They do. So they set each year, they review the investment policy and the asset allocation for the assets under management and make any adjustments that they deem necessary.
And so over the years, the 41 years, how has the fund's investment strategy changed?
So when the fund was first created, the statutes put in place to guide the fund said the fund could only be invested in fixed income. So think bonds, right? Treasury bonds. And at the time, interest rates were really high. If you think back to the early 80s, you had interest rates on treasury bonds in excess of 10, 12, 15% at times. So that generated a significant amount of income on the fund. Over the years, that legislative list of allowable investments increased to include real estate and public equities or stocks. And then back in 2005, the legislature removed the list and said the Board of Trustees needed to act as prudent investors. And ever since then, we've been able to diversify the fund into more types of investments that include infrastructure or private equity or hedge funds. And that has really benefited the fund's growth.
So when you say prudent investors, what does that mean?
Prudent investor means that you need to act as another institutional, like-minded institutional investor would behave, and behave prudently, not for your own benefit. And it means you can't speculate. So, for example, we don't invest directly in commodities because that is viewed as speculation, or invest directly in currencies because that is viewed as speculative.
Okay. I would like to go to the phones and take our first caller. We have Jim from Eagle River. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, there's been a lot of loose talk about the permanent fund, and I think it shouldn't be used in any way to guarantee oil or gas line investment. I think that's a scheme. The gas line is a bad idea. We should export the gas off the North Slope, save the expense of the gas line. The permanent fund should be preserved for the future of Alaska, not the present. That's my feeling.
Thank you. Thank you for your call, Jim. Ms. Riddell, decisions like whether or not to invest in something like the gas line, who would make that decision?
That's a very good question. And those types of questions are for the Board of Trustees to decide. In statute, our investments in Alaska are very clearly directed. So we're allowed to invest in investments in Alaska so long as they generate as good, if not better, returns than something we would find outside. In addition, the Board of Trustees adopted a policy that requires at least one outside institutional investor of like size to be investing in the same project that we do, so that we can have that due diligence by an outside non-Alaskan fund to be looking at some of these things with us.
So basically meaning like the permit fund cannot be the sole investor, the sole major investor in something like a gas line.
Correct.
All right. Are there a lot of misconceptions about the fund, like questions that you often get asked that you kind of have to help people understand?
You know, I think probably one of the bigger misconceptions in the past has been about the idea of the earnings reserve account and the corpus of the fund and understanding the role that inflation proofing plays. I think people assume incorrectly that the principal of the fund gets to keep any money it makes, and it doesn't. So when I say that the principal makes a portion of the investment, any gain that it generates as a result of participating in that investment flows to the earnings reserve account. So the way to think about it is if we bought that Apple stock at $10 mm-hmm. and $8 was coming from the principal and $2 was and $2 was coming from the earnings reserve account, and then we sold that Apple stock for $10, the earnings reserve account would get its $2 back, the principal would get its $8 back, and then that $10 gain all goes to the earnings reserve account. So the principal doesn't get to keep any of its gains or its distributions from what it has participated in. And that's why inflation proofing is really so important, because it allows the principal of the fund to capture some of that wealth that is generated as a result of the investment activities it's made.
Give us a quick explanation of exactly what inflation proofing means.
So inflation proofing was the recognition that inflation is going to happen, and that a dollar today isn't worth a dollar 10 years from now. But if we want to benefit all generations of Alaskans with the permanent fund, we need to make sure that that dollar still maintains its purchasing power. And so the idea behind inflation proofing was to restore to the principal that effect of inflation on the purchasing power of the principal. And I think it was Trustee Rasmussen who said inflation is a thief in the night who steals from the fund because it makes sure that the fund can't invest to the same levels for the future generation as it did for yesteryear's generation and that the current generation is benefiting from.
All right. I would like to jump back to the call, back to the telephone lines. We have Don from Anchorage on the line. Don, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, as I told the gentleman who picked up the phone, I didn't hear anything said about fiduciary duty, although I heard a lot of hinting about it. I did not originally vote for Jay Hammond, but when I saw what he was trying to do with the permanent fund and setting it up, he got my vote on a second time around. And I've been a solid advocate of the principles that he laid down and the guidelines that he wanted for that permanent fund. And I have reiterated that to some of our representatives in Juneau. And that when I hear something coming from somebody like Donald Trump saying, well, Norway's a socialized state, we don't need their aspirations or this or that about Japan or one thing or another. Mm-hmm. Hammond was one of those who said he went over and he saw a starburst in Japan for recycling. He was very wise when it came to trying to develop things way ahead for Alaska. And even to this day, there's too many people in Juneau and Washington that are too short-sighted to see it. When I hear somebody talking about the Rasmussen Fund, when I hear him talking about the permanent fund and things that South Central has done up here, bravo is all I can say for you. You deserve a good big pat on the back, and keep on fighting for it because it's well worth it. Some people don't like it because they say, well, you're just working to benefit the poor. It's like I told a guy when I came out of the pool the other day, and he had a son or whatever with him, and I said, you do understand. I said, when you retire 10 or 20 years from now, he's going to be in charge, not you. Teach him well.
So, Don, I'd like to steer this back to your initial comment and your initial question, which was about fiduciary duty. Ms. Riddell, could you talk about that a bit? What does that mean? What is the fiduciary duty of the permanent fund and those managing it?
The fiduciary duty is really essential, and it sort of falls into the core of our being, because we are responsible for treating the fund as if it were our own and to make sure that everything we do is in protection of that fund. Our fiduciary duty is first to the principal of the fund. That's our primary fiduciary duty, is to protect the principal of the fund. It's why we're out fighting so hard for inflation proofing and making sure that the principal is protected. Mm-hmm. And then the second level of responsibility is to the earnings reserve account. So as I pointed out, the prudent investor, we can't act in a speculative manner. We can't take the earnings reserve account and invest it in, we're not invested in Bitcoin, for example. We have to act with a fiduciary duty to protect the fund and to act as that, with that first and foremost, and setting aside any other private agenda that we may have with respect to the fund.
Another thing that he mentioned was talking about Norway. I feel like Norway often comes up when we're talking about the permanent fund. How does a permanent fund compare and contrast to Norway's sovereign wealth fund?
We actually work with sovereign wealth funds around the world, not just Norway. Norway is obviously one of the largest sovereign wealth funds in the world. It is close to $1 trillion dollars. I believe it's around $850 billion was the last number I personally saw. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the largest. We frequently compare notes with our sovereign wealth partners around the world to understand what is driving certain decisions and how they're thinking about investing, where they're putting their money. And so that conversation is important. Alaska Permanent Fund is recognized as one of the leading sovereign wealth funds in the world. We've led the discussion on transparency in terms of talking about where the fund is invested, how it is invested, our policies are public. You can go on our website and see where we're invested. You can see what the value of the fund is on any given day. And all of that has been recognized globally. And we are a premier partner and sought out as the United States' leading sovereign wealth fund.
All right. We're going to go to email real quick. And for those who are just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. And today we're talking about the permanent fund. And you can reach us by calling 1-800-478-8255. Over email, it says, Ms. Riddell mentioned APFC trustee Elmer Rasmussen. Can you comment on his quote in trustee documents saying, quote, the permanent fund comes from the oil owned by the state of Alaska. Like oil, the fund belongs to the people of Alaska collectively. The Alaska Constitution requires that all natural resources belonging to the state be used, developed, and conserved for the maximum benefit of the people. In short, the fund is a constitutional right and not a gift bestowed by a generous government. Shouldn't Alaskans be allowed to vote on changes to their fund? In 1989, Tony Knowles recognized this ownership and gave the public an advisory vote on the same kind of changes proposed now to spend the earnings and cut the PFD. Would any sort of decision like that be, would you be responsible for a decision like that, or is that all up to the legislature?
That is all up to the legislature and the governor. And we are, our sole responsibility is to manage and invest the funds we've been entrusted with so far. So I would encourage listeners, if they have these types of concerns or want this to happen, to let their legislators know what their opinion is.
All right. Thank you for that. We're going to go back to the phones. We have Courtney from Eagle River. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Okay, so I think it's very wrong for Governor Walker to put the mismanagement on government on the backs of the Alaska people taking the PFD. But my question is, what has he done with the money that he has taken from the people's PFD checks? How is he going to spend that? And why hasn't it been put towards government spending already? Thanks. I'll take my answer off there.
Thank you. Is that something that you can address, Ms. Riddell?
I can address a portion of it. So
okay.
I can report that we transferred out only the amount that was finally appropriated for the dividend. So to the extent that the dividend would have been higher and required a higher appropriation, so for example, in 2016, the half that was vetoed mm-hmm. stayed in the earnings reserve account. So all of that money has stayed in the earnings reserve account and has been invested by the Permanent Fund Corporation staff.
Okay. Speaking of your investments, you recently had a company called Bridgewater run a stress test on the permanent fund. What exactly is that, and what did it tell you?
So the point of the stress tests were to get a sense of what conditions would make it difficult to comply with a statutory percent of market value rule. So the legislature has been contemplating for the last couple of years of changing the statutes to basically say, let's just make this very simple, and we'll take a percent of the market value, and we're going to average that market value five of the first six previous years. Okay. So we're going to cause a one-year delay in that market value, and we're going to withdraw a sum of money equal to a percent. And the percent that is in Senate Bill 26, which was passed by both the House and the Senate a year ago, but sits in conference committee to resolve differences between the two versions, contemplated that you would take 5.25% for the first 2 years, and then it would step down to 5%. And the question that kept getting asked was this sustainable? Could we keep doing this? So what the Board of Trustees asked Bridgewater to do is, can you stress this and tell us under what kinds of adverse market conditions this would not be sustainable? And the answer is that there are some adverse market conditions, such as the shock we experienced in 2007-2008 with the big market crash. But for the most part, it was going to be sustainable, and that there was a possibility that you would not necessarily hit the same targets. So you might not, you would need to earn, for example, 6.3% each year, year in and year out, to never touch the amounts in the earnings reserve account and always make enough money to meet that percent of market value draw.
And do we? Does the fund?
52% of the time, they said, given our outlook for future rates, 52% of the time, you will meet that requirement. If you don't, there's enough, you have to earn 4.4%. If you earn 4.4%, there's enough, you will go into the earnings reserve account and have to use some of the earnings reserve account to meet your draw requirement. So the idea is that you would earn between those two rates, you would make this sustainable.
Okay.
Now, the question then is, okay, so we're earning this, but what if we have a really bad year, like a 2007?
Yeah.
And it would wipe out, it would eliminate everything in the earnings reserve account that year, and you would need a year of recovery similar to what we had in 2008-2009 and since then to restore that, and you would come back. So you might not be able to meet a draw in a very stressful year, but you would recover enough to make then future draws. So the idea behind the stress analysis was to give the board a sense under what conditions would you be not be able to make, and to give the legislature a sense of what those parameters might be as well.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Jim in Anchorage. Jim, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been in Alaska, well, I remember in August of 77 when the pipeline was turned on. I came up here a young, starry-eyed hard rock mineral exploration geologist, and on the heels of basically a notion from Congress that Alaska barely eked its way into the Union by a single vote because Alaska was blessed with abundant and diverse natural resources to an extent that it would not be detrimental to admit Alaska to the Union. The idea was never that Alaska would have one investment egg in its basket, oil. So my question is, and I'll hang up after I pose it to you, but my question is, if you look for example, if we were to role play and I'm the investor and I only have oil in my portfolio as a citizen of Alaska, doesn't your fiduciary duty and or the rule of prudent investment require you in good faith to explore, not by direct appropriation from our legislature, but using money from the permanent fund as well to invest in infrastructure, mining, logging, fishing, and promoting wealth within Alaska? Can we invest in ourselves? I think it's great that your job is to look for bonds and treasuries mm-hmm. and hedge funds and all that, but I would be having a serious talk with my portfolio manager, I can tell you, if he just said, Jim, we're in oil, we're sticking with it, high or low, that's all we got, when in fact, the owner state vision that Walter Hickel had is embodied in our Constitution, that we are to diversify our resources. So I guess I apologize for the length of it. It's more of a statement than a question, but does your obligation not require you at least somewhat to advocate to the legislature if direct appropriation for these other resources is required to diversify the economy? Because from a macro standpoint, well, the only reason you're even having this discussion is that we only have oil.
Jim, let's let Ms. Riddell answer your question because I think it's pretty straightforward. Thank you. Ms. Riddell, can you address his concerns?
So I think there's sort of two parts to this question. There's our fiduciary responsibility to the fund and the monies that we have received in the fund. And then there's the diversification of the economy of the state of Alaska. So our responsibility is to the dollars that have been put in this trust called the Permanent Fund. And we have created a diversified portfolio that is not dependent on the same geography as the rest of the state. So it is invested not just in Alaska and not just in the United States, but rather it's diversified around the world. There are investments around the world. So we get the benefit of growing economies around the world, especially in those times when the economy of the United States or Alaska might not be doing well. And secondly, why we diversify through type of investment, whether it's private equity, whether it's bonds, whether it's stocks, whether it's real estate. And all of those assets perform differently under different economic constraints. And creating that diversification reduces the risk so that the permanent fund is invested in perpetuity. So that is our goal. I think the question your caller posed is more about diversifying the economy of the state of Alaska away. And the legislature can choose to use some of the earnings reserve account to fund those types of investments if it chose to, if there was a movement to. But in terms of our fiduciary responsibility, it's important that we stay with a focus on those future generations of Alaskans and diversifying outside of Alaska.
All right, thank you. I'd like to invite Dave from Cordova onto the program. Dave, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. Finally, a lot of us have been asking for a lot more permanent fund, both sides having a voice in this for going on over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one question, but I'd like to preface it with stating that I've been following the retreat of the Arctic Ocean ice for years, and it's going away, and I agree with the previous caller and have been advocating for an LNG facility to be put at Prudhoe Bay because as of February, an LNG tanker traveled unassisted all across the Arctic. This ice is going away.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no reason to invest all this incredible amount of money and all the permitting that would be required to.
I'm sorry, Dave, how does that relate to the permanent fund?
I'm just getting my plug in. Thank you very much. The permanent fund, my big question is, what happened? Why did our investment? Oh, yeah, let me qualify that, too. It relates to Governor Walker wanting to get into the permanent fund to use it for a gas line there.
Okay.
Now, my big question is, Why did we so dramatically underperform other significant wealth funds and hedge funds about 3 years ago? Alaska was way behind the curve, and I never did hear an explanation for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. Ms. Rodell.
Sure. I'm not sure of the performance time frame that the caller is referencing. When I look at our three-year performance, so how we've done over the last 3 years, we have beat all of our benchmarks significantly. So, for example, our investment return for 3 years was 6.2% versus our passive benchmark of 3.37 and our performance benchmark of 4.77. So we have outperformed by a significant margin our the benchmarks that we're measured against. So I'm not sure which sovereign wealth funds or what the caller is referring to as a benchmark, but I give those points as reference points that I have in front of me.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We have reached the midway point, and we will be switching guests after a quick break. Ms. Rodell, thank you so much for joining us and for giving us some more details about how the permanent fund works. We'll be back from a quick break with Attorney Joe Geldhoff with the group Permanent Fund Defenders and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. Thanks for joining us, Ms. Rodell.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Hi, and welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today, we are discussing the Permanent Fund. For the first half of the program, Permanent Fund CEO Angela Rodell was joining us in the studios at KTOO in Juneau. But now we're going to be shifting the conversation from how the fund works to the pros and cons of drawing from the fund to pay for part of state government. Joining us still from Juneau at KTOO are Attorney Joe Geldhoff with the group Permanent Fund Defenders and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. Thank you both very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
And listeners, here's a chance for you to talk to people who both support drawing from the fund and oppose it. What are your ideas? What questions do you still have? Weigh in by calling 1-800-478-8255 statewide or 550-8422 in Anchorage. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Lieutenant Governor Mallott, your administration supports using money from the earnings reserve to fund the government going forward. Why? What does your plan look like?
Why does it have to be articulated like that? Jay Hammond wanted to use the earnings of the permanent fund in our future in order to meet government. To him, that was why the permanent fund was largely created. I was appointed to the Board of Trustees by Governor Hammond. I took Elmer Rasmussen's seat, and both of them sat me down and talked about their vision for Alaska's future. I was 8 years a trustee, 3 years chair. I was 5 years the executive director of the fund. And without question, one of the key purposes of the Alaska Permanent Fund was to meet the state's revenue needs in the future when oil began to diminish. That was the fundamental purpose for its creation.
And that was the fundamental reason why it was set up the way it is with the two different sections and the principal not being able to be touched?
Well, of course, Alaskan voters wanted to protect the principal, and it was placed into the Constitution in order to do so. And the earnings of the permanent fund are what we're talking about, not the principal, not the corpus.
Mm-hmm. So with all of your time on the board, how did that shape the specific plan that you're advocating for?
What we have before us in the Alaska legislature is Senate Bill 26, which was passed by the Senate. A bill from the House, which essentially also used earnings of the permanent fund to help fund government, and that those two pieces of legislation are now in conference and would use some portion of the earnings to meet government need going forward. The governor, as early as 2015, put together a comprehensive plan to meet the deficits, which at the time were over $4 billion, and would have created a plan going forward, which would have both protected the corpus and the growth of the permanent fund going forward, which would have allowed for new revenue to meet our needs, which would have preserved the accounts, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, going forward. And instead, the legislative leadership did not act, and we spent down all of those reserves to the point that now we have $2 billion in reserves remaining, other than the earnings reserve account.
Mm-hmm.
And my opinion is that the earnings reserve account is an integral part of the permanent fund itself and should be treated as such.
All right. Mr. Geldhoff, your organization opposes using the permanent fund. Why?
Well, I'm not sure that's entirely correct that they oppose using the permanent fund. The issue is the permanent fund dividend and how we will structure draws from the permanent fund earnings reserve account to both pay the citizens of Alaska a permanent fund dividend and to fund government. I want to just back up a little bit and point out that Jay Hammond was instrumental, absolutely instrumental, in establishing the permanent fund dividend. It was really Hugh Malone and Oral Freeman and other people in the legislature, when Jay Hammond was governor, who came up with the idea of establishing the permanent fund. Jay Hammond embraced that. And they should have, because in the late 60s, when Alaska got its first big bomb of royalty money from oil up in the Sagavanirktok River in Prudhoe Bay, the legislature went through that at an incredibly rapid rate. And there was a widespread acknowledgement that we were just spending and spending and spending, and we needed to save. So the idea of saving 25% of the royalties was embraced by Jay Hammond, as advocated by Hugh Malone and other people in the legislature. Hammond's genius was to say, you know, we'll never be able to protect the permanent fund if we don't have a tie to the people in the form of a dividend. And, you know, the fund is the people of Alaska's fund, and the dividend is a way of sharing that savings wealth with them. So the issue is, do we need to spend money on government? Well, it's an arguable point. I mean, there's a few people who say no. There's a lot of people who say yes. But can we go forward and pay the people a dividend in this state from their fund and at the same time fund some of government functions? I think the position that I have and that a number of other people that I work with have is that if we're going to start funding government from the earnings reserve account and pay a dividend, we need to put that in the Constitution. Frankly, there's a lot of people who just don't trust the political caste to do what's really right. And that's because they perceive, rightly or wrongly, I think rightly in many cases, Alaska has a significant spending problem. We spend too much, we save too
little. I disagree with that notion. We do not spend too much. We spend enough to meet Alaska's needs. And the notion that somehow the governor, for example, reduced the dividend in order to do away with it is absolutely wrong. What the governor did was at a time when the legislature was spending down our reserves at the same time that we were reducing the cost of government. The cost of government today is, in real dollar terms, at 2002 levels. And the governor's veto of half of the permanent fund appropriation, not the dividend itself, kept over $1 billion in the earnings reserve account and allowed it to grow and add to the value of the permanent fund by $20 million. And if that amount and the additional billions that the legislature has spent down were left to no action by anyone, we would be looking at ultimately the demise of the dividend in the near-term future. That is the dilemma. So, we absolutely must use some earnings in a very responsible way to meet Alaska's needs going forward. That is not debatable.
And so, well, Lieutenant Governor, this leads me straight to a question that actually a caller has emailed in. He says that he keeps hearing that if the legislature didn't cap the PFD would go away in a few years. If the principal is never touched, how would the fund go away? And how would the PFD go away?
It is not that the fund would go away. Joe's absolutely right when we need to be concerned about how the legislature deals with very significant public policy issues, particularly appropriations. And the concern is that the legislature has absolutely spent down virtually all of our reserves so that if we are dependent just on reserves, we will be out of those reserves in this current budget year. Mm-hmm. And that means that there will be pressure on the earnings of the permanent fund going forward, such that the dividend itself could well be put at risk.
Okay. I'd like to invite Jim from Eagle River onto the program. Jim, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor Malott, I do not envy the situation you find yourself in, and I blame a lot of it on the legislature for failing to pass an income tax, leaving the administration with the unenviable position of having to use permanent fund earnings. My problem with that is that by reducing the dividend in any amount is the most regressive form of income tax imaginable. We have, instead of an income tax, a progressive income tax where the wealthier are paying more. By reducing the dividend of the PFD, we're taxing the 9-year-olds and the single mothers and the high school kids as much as we are the people that earn several hundred thousand dollars a year. Do you see any way around this since the legislature seems adamant about not passing an income tax?
Well, certainly Governor Hammond regretted to the day he passed that he allowed the permanent the income tax to be stricken from Alaska law. He knew how difficult that it would be to get any kind of broad-based tax back in the future. The dividend absolutely needs to be a key aspect of Alaska's economy into the future. And that was the reason that the governor made his veto. It was to protect the dividend going forward and to remove, hopefully, that from the legislative table such that they would then act to protect the dividend. And whether or not it should be placed into the Constitution, I think, is a valid public policy debate. Very much so. And the dividend needs to be protected going forward. I have myself 9 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren, and I want them and those that they bring forth into a wonderful, beautiful Alaska to be receiving the dividend in their time, a dividend that is growing because the Alaska Permanent Fund itself is then growing.
Maybe we could talk about what I think the Lieutenant Governor and I agree on.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we have a permanent fund. We have a permanent fund that has been managed decently. In fact, in some cases, extremely well. It's, you know, you can look at other sovereign funds like the Heritage Fund in Alberta. Nobody talks about it because it's basically dead. They did all the wrong things. They decided to invest in Alberta and wound up, you know, building a bunch of strip malls outside of Edmonton that cratered. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, throughout the 40-some years it's been in existence, has done a good job at creating wealth and protecting the wealth that we have saved. But the essential 25% royalty is a fraction of the money that's come into the state. It didn't include the income tax on oil companies. It didn't include the property tax. And in fact, 75% of the royalties from our mineral wealth were available and were spent by the legislature. Some good, some bad. The Lieutenant Governor disagrees with me that we have a spending problem, and he's entitled to his opinion. This isn't the show to get into where we could save or cut anything, but what we need to do is ensure that the People's Fund throws off a distribution in order to, as I think Jay Hammond would say, to protect the fund. That dividend is essential, and we can't split the dividend from the corpus of the fund. And that's why I think it's absolutely essential to have, if we're going to talk about a percentage of market value, it has to be enshrined in the Constitution. Because if you don't, later or sooner or later, the politicians will come after your dividend, and they'll do it because they can. And I'm going to invoke Willie Sutton here when he was asked. You know, Willie Sutton, the famous bank robber, was asked by a reporter, you know, he's caught all the time, why do you keep robbing banks? And he said, because that's where the money is. The permanent fund dividend is the largest hunk of available money for the legislature to fund what they want to fund. They love spending money. For 30 years, we've elected politicians who haven't got the discipline and really aren't held accountable to spend money the way they did when Byron was a young guy and he was running around the legislature and in the administration.
So, speaking of being held accountable, I am held accountable to have a quick break in the show. We'll be right back with more questions and talk about the permanent fund.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
And we are back from that short break. You're listening to Talk of Alaska, and today's conversation is about the Permanent Fund. My guests are Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott and Attorney Joe Geldhoff. Back to the conversation. I'd like to go to the phones. We have Bill on the line from Anchorage. Bill, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, I moved to Alaska a long time ago, and I didn't have anything. Now I own a home. I'd like to help out a little bit. Would it be possible to set up an escrow account on a voluntary basis, to not get my permanent fund check, have the state use it, and at the end of 5 years have some sort of terms to have it paid back?
That's a great question. Is that something that feasibly could happen?
Well, I don't know, but I think ideas as to how we meet Alaska's future revenue needs are very important, that we need to be artful, we need to be innovative. I will emphasize again that both Bill Walker and I support the continuation of the dividend into the future, and as long as we are in office, we'll fight to protect it and allow it to grow. The notion of enshrining it in the Constitution is necessarily a part of the debate for two reasons. One is that it sucks the air out of the room when you discuss public policy around the permanent fund generally, and in public policy decision making, sometimes you say, well, let's get that one off the table. and that may be a considerable part of the decision making going forward. The other is that the dividend itself is a significant contributor to the Alaskan economy. We have a very small consumer base, and to have in October or some suggest, and this is another idea, that the dividend be apportioned out on a quarterly basis so that its meaningful impact on the economy is felt year-round, it adds significantly to consumer spending and to a meaningful degree to savings for things like college and for other Alaskan needs, that its consequence is very positive and needs to be maintained into the future.
Mr. Golub, what do you think of those ideas?
Well, first, I think Lieutenant Governor's right. The permanent fund dividend, as it's paid out to each Alaskan that's entitled to it and applied, has an enormous economic, positive economic effect on our state. And this is the one area where we treat every Alaskan equally, whether you live in Ketchikan or Kaktovik, whether you live remote or in an urban area, whether you're a southeasterner or from Fairbanks, we treat all Alaskans equally. And there's a lot of value in that. And it's particularly beneficial to the people who, you know, don't live in an urban area, who do not have access to strong employment situations. And to lower the permanent fund dividend or lead to a situation that eliminates it will have catastrophic effects on many Alaskans, and they're the least able to afford that. And that's one of the reasons I and people that I am associated with strongly believe in a constitutional protection for the permanent fund.
So then
I got to tell you, folks, if you don't demand that of your elected officials, it won't happen.
I'd like to make a comment on the history of the dividend itself. Mm-hmm. It flows back to our Constitution, where Alaskans own our resources in the ground, and we can't sell them in the ground. We must develop them. And it was as pure to Governor Hammond as it was to Elmer Rasmussen, who, when I took his seat, he was of such stature that when his replacement was appointed, it at the time was called to the Elmer Rasmussen seat. And I was that first person. And he said to me that he felt really good about the dividend as pure public policy because it gave him, as one of the wealthiest men in Alaska and the poorest person in Alaska, the same right to the dividend because it was a pure expression of our ownership in Alaska's resources. It was not to be means tested. Certainly, it would have very significant greater by factors of hundreds, at least in the example of Elmer Rasmussen and an average Alaskan. But it was pure, and it needs to be kept pure going into the future. If it becomes means-tested, if we use it by comparing those who really need it, and that is hugely important. It makes a huge impact, and that's one of the reasons that it needs to be maintained into the future. So, but for every Alaskan to be able to obtain it makes us unique in many ways in the world.
So for both of you, how important is it that you keep the PFD based on the fund's recent performance as they are under the current formula versus capping them in a certain way or changing the formula?
The Governor Walker's administration and I do not believe in capping the dividend over time. It should grow with the performance of the fund, beginning from a sustainable level, and that is our goal.
And Mr. Goldhoff?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say the current formula, which is adopted in law, which calls for a payout to each Alaskan who's entitled and eligible and applies for the permanent fund dividend, is based on essentially on a five-year rolling average of the funds that the permanent fund makes. It doesn't invade the corpus, as it said, the principal amount in the permanent fund, but it's a five-year rolling average of if the permanent fund corporation does well, and they are doing well. So that formula has worked for decades. That formula has put millions and millions of dollars into individual Alaskans' hands to do with as they will. And most of them do well with that funds. They do well for themselves, their families, and they promote the economy. The real debate here, and I guess at least how I see it, is if you keep up that formula, which has worked so well for decades, the legislature wants more money. The legislature, who's already gone through, what, $10 billion in savings in the last couple of years and spent every dime they can get their hands on, they want more. And that's where I say, and it's not, I'm not blaming Bill Walker or Byron Mallott for the spending problem. I'm saying the legislature, there's no end to the demand for money. And now they're coming after your permanent fund dividend.
Let me just say this very quickly. Your earlier guest, Angela Brodel, the CEO of the Alaska Great Permanent Fund Corporation, mentioned the legislature itself, of its own volition, appropriated back to the permanent fund over $7 billion. And I was the CEO during part of that period. The legislature is made up of good people. They have the impulse and the public policy desire to do right by all Alaskans. And we need to work hard as an administration, as a public, with the legislature in order to get to where we collectively need to get. Now, sometimes that comes very hard, and indeed it is coming very hard now. But you have to believe that ultimately we will do right in our service to the people, and it's something that Bill Walker, I know, lives in and breathes every single day. And we will continue that effort, and we believe that we can make gains with this legislature.
All right. Well, that is all we have time for today. Thank you to everyone who called and wrote in. Today, the conversation was about the permanent fund. My guests in the KTOO studios in Juneau were Angela Riddell, Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, and Attorney Joe Geldhoff with the group Permanent Fund Defenders. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for your calls. The producer today, audio engineer today, is Dave Waldron. I'm Ann Hellman. Have a great day.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.